Tag simply enough at dj.walewski.com. I will let him pronounce that and spell it for you.
Walewski, yes. W-A-L-E-T-Z-K-Y. It's the family curse. Often misspelled name.
My last name is Alzon. People sometimes go out of their way to mispronounce it.
That's nice.
It is nice. All right. Now, we are in the middle, still, of a Democratic race for the presidency.
Don't I know it.
We don't know who's going to get the nomination. At this point, it literally could be anyone. It could even be Ron Paul, even though he is obviously Republican and not in the race anymore.
Quite a spoiler, Ron Paul. I think that Obama's going to get the nomination. It's just a question of math. I think Hillary feels like she deserves the nomination, and she feels like she's owed the nomination, and I completely disagree with her. But she's gonna pursue this scorched earth thing till the ends of, I guess, June.
I have posed this question at least a half a dozen times already. The Hillary Clinton campaign is about experience. The Obama campaign is about change. And I'm still not too sure, first of all, what Hillary means by experience.
That's good. That's what they want you to. Want you to know what they mean.
It's very flexible. I don't know what Obama means by change. Aren't these basically
change is lack of experience, and experience is corruption. So,
well, aren't they?
That's how
I
see these things.
Aren't they basically throwaway words?
Oh, of course.
Dumb little catchphrases.
They're placeholders for whatever they, whatever the goals of the candidates are.
But to you, what is more important: someone who will bring change or someone who has experience?
Experience is worth very little to me. Like I say, experience to me just means corruption. It means that. In order to get the kind of experience, what did you have to do? Whose money did you have to take, and what kind of moral compromises did you have to make, and so forth? I think experience is it's a great canard. Was it Dodd who said in one of the debates, like, nobody's ready on day one. Nobody, you might think you know what it's like to be the president. Nobody has any idea what it's like to be the president. But for me, change is paramount, because I'm not a huge fan of the way things work now. Even though it's mostly an empty word, but, I like how it sounds. I'll cop to that. I think change is it's a placeholder for, all your frustrations with the system. We're going to change it. I don't even know what your frustrations are, but they're going to get changed. That's the idea.
It sometimes feels like when you hear Barack Obama speak, he is playing to a crowd that it has become over the last 8 years or so very disillusioned with how the process works. Now you have this guy.
One wonders if it's just 8 years. I'm sure there are people who have been disillusioned for a lifetime.
What makes Barack Obama such an appealing person to that many people?
He doesn't have the same style as, say, Hillary Clinton or Bill Clinton or. It's a stylistic difference. People pick up on it. He's not like a regular politician. I think, the fact that he was a community organizer, to me is important. I don't know if anybody else cares about that. I think he's a great speaker, and there doesn't have to be too much behind it.
But, Ronald Reagan was a great speaker, and a lot of Democrats dismiss his presidency as nothing more than a joke.
Except the Reagan Democrats who voted for him. Based on the fact that he was a great speaker. So I think he's got, he got the converts the same way Obama's getting Republican converts. It's the same kind of thing. The power of this rhetoric is tremendous. I think it's total bullshit on both sides, but, it's powerful.
It sometimes feels like Obama is a cult leader, and everyone is sort of getting sucked in to the church of Obama.
I think there's a great difference between the way the campaigns are run. In Hillary's case, and I've written about this on my blog, in Hillary's case, it's sort of like, get out of her way and just let her be the president, With Obama's, I'm sorry, my cell phone is ringing in the background. With Obama's campaign, it's like,
Throw him out.
Who the hell's calling me at this time? Everybody I know knows I'm here.
We can't have cell phones ringing. It's distracting to the host. Get out of here. Where's Elon? Bring him in instead. Now, come on. Make your point.
Elon? Anyway, the thing is that, when you vote for Obama, there's a sense that, you're part of a movement, that he needs your help, that he's going to, he brings you into the whatever the circle is. With Hillary, the campaign theme from day one is, it's going to be me. Just let me do it.
Entitlement
is exactly what it is.
It is her destiny to become the first female president of the United States.
Right.
Just like, you know, Bill Clinton, there was that famous picture in the 1960s of Bill Clinton meeting John F. Kennedy at the White House when Kennedy was president. You know, Bill Clinton, from, like, day one, wanted to be president of the United States. John Kerry.
There's nothing wrong with wanting to be president from day one. I think there are a lot of people who want to be president. Or you know, John Kerry, you know, who is, like, running for president since college. You know, like, there are a lot of people who, you know, who have aspirations. There's nothing wrong with aspirations. I think the problem is, and if you look at, you know, how did she get to the position she's in now? It's not like she built this huge, you know, cadre of New Yorkers who wanted to vote for her. No, she got the DLC to, you know, to get everyone, all the other Democratic contenders to get out of the way. And as a New Yorker, personally, I resent the fact that there's this perception that our state is so welcoming that we will let anyone who's related to the president be our senator as long as they want to be the next president. You know, RFK, speaking of JFK, RFK did the same thing. He actually had grown up a little bit in New York. Hillary had never even lived in New York before she got here. I think it's an insult to me as a New Yorker that I've lived here longer than my senator.
Right.
But again, you know, like, how did she get that? She's the most corrupt woman in America. She's so deep inside the machine, she was married to the president.
I think Teddy Roosevelt was the last actual New Yorker to run for office.
Because
he comes from up here, or he came from upstate New York.
Yeah, well, he was the police commissioner here, and he was, I could tell you all kinds of things about TR. But
we don't have time.
Thank goodness. Because I can't remember any of them.
That's good. Or bad, considering if you're writing a book on him.
I'm not writing a book on TR.
All right, that's good. If you do come back, if you and I had spoken...
Now I'm going to write that book.
You have to. If you and I had spoken a year ago about the same topic, about Hillary Clinton and this guy, Barack Obama, I have a feeling that the conventional wisdom would have been Hillary Clinton would easily win the nomination because, of course, she has the name recognition. She has the Clinton name brand.
Exactly.
Barack Obama
and
still...
Don't forget about the money that she'd amassed. I mean, she had this tremendous fundraising advantage over him. She had been raising money for years and years and years and been doling it out to her friends and, you know,
right.
This whole thing.
And then, you know, Barack Obama came out of Illinois... And he gave this wonderful speech in 2004.
Right.
Most recently. That was his most recent experience. And then he kind of like just catapulted to where we now stand, him leading the Democratic nomination. Did you think it would go this far without knowing who the Democratic candidate would be?
Yeah. I was always, you know, afraid of Hillary running for office. And, you know, I wonder if she even has any interest in being our senator after all this. But, you know, I was a Richardson supporter. I really thought that he was going to...
Bill Richardson, the governor of Mexico.
Right. Who may, I hope, be a VP nomination. But people were clearly dissatisfied with Hillary Clinton. I mean, like, she had gotten a certain... She only loses points. You know, like, she can regain constituencies. You know, she was leading by 20 points in Ohio and Texas, and then she lost them, and then, you know, like, the bounce back is that she regains people, but she doesn't make any converts. Hillary Clinton is this known quantity. You know, like, she's got a certain amount of the vote, and people can take that away from her.
Right.
And I'm sure that there are a lot of people who are really dissatisfied. I mean, I think the biggest rift, like, within the DNC is between the, you know, the Clintons and Rahm Emanuel and the whole DLC crowd and
the constant and the shifting battle of superdelegates.
Yeah.
There are something like two.
Well,
or three
the thing with Dean actually goes back before the nomination. I think, like, if you look at 2006, and Rahm Emanuel was the guy who was saying, "We need to concentrate. The Democrats need to concentrate on the big cities, the big races, the, you know, places we know we can win. And we're going to pour all this money into, you know, slightly competitive races." And Dean, much in the way Obama's doing now, is like, no, we're going to run a 50-state campaign. We're going to be everywhere, and we're going to make it a fight.
Right, it was a national campaign.
Right.
From the very beginning.
And that's, you know, that's totally new thinking for the Democrats. It's not how the DLC operates.
No, that's more of a Republican thing.
Well, the Republicans have a tremendous database, and they go into churches, and they,
historically,
know, they have direct mail.
Historically, though, the Republicans have had the better organization, and we have seen in the last year a complete reversal of that.
15 years, sure.
Now, you know, the Republicans have been in chaos. Even now that they have a nominee, John McCain, they're still not happy with him.
Well, you know, he knew that. I mean, everybody knew that no matter who was going to be the nominee in the Republican Party, that it was not going to make the rest of the Republican Party happy, whether it was Romney or Huckabee or McCain. I thought Huckabee would have been great. I would have loved to seen a Huckabee-Obama debate, because they basically agree on sort of goals. They just disagree on how to get there.
And at least they share the same religion, I believe. We're talking to DJ Waletsky of DJ.Waletsky.com. Let's talk about foreign policy.
Let's talk about foreign policy. Actually, you know, before we talk about foreign policy, just the address of the website, no one on earth is ever going to remember how to spell Waletsky. It's much easier if you just go to casualasides.com. Just to make a note. All Let's right. get back to foreign policy.
No. You've corrected the host, so now we're going to have to put you in timeout.
That's okay. It'll happen again.
I'm sure it will, because I'm fraught with errors. Foreign policy, no matter who gets the Democratic nomination, the foreign policy is basically Iraq, and whomever the Democratic president is will probably get us out of Iraq.
You know, I don't think either statement is true, and I'll tell you why. One, Hillary Clinton, along with Senator Evan Bayh of Indiana, has been agitating for a war with Iran for many, many years. And if you look at, you know, if you look at her vote, the speech she made before the authorization to use force in Iraq, all the stuff that she was saying about Iraq, which turned out not to be true, you know, they weren't going after nuclear weapons. They weren't really, you know, they weren't in league with Al-Qaeda. They didn't really have a terrorist organization set up. They weren't really a threat. All of those things happen to be true about Iran, except that Iran is four times as large territorially and three times as large population-wise.
Right.
So it's an even worse idea, just in terms of a military strategy. It's an even worse idea to go into Iran than Iraq, even though Iran clearly, you know, like, has links with Hezbollah, is, you know, going after nuclear capability of some kind.
Iran is and was the bigger threat.
Yeah, but the problem with both countries, and actually I'm against the war in Afghanistan too, and so I'll extend it to those, is that the way we work, our whole idea of diplomacy, whether it was under the Clintons with Tomahawk diplomacy or with Bush, you know, with the, like, forget about Tomahawks, let's just send in the Marines kind of diplomacy, we can't really do that. Not only can we not afford to send that many troops or that much money or equipment or whatever, but we don't really have the ability to enforce our objectives with military might the way we used to. I mean, like, we're not going to overrun Germany anymore. There's no country like that works that way. We're, like, the whole idea of sending in troops to enforce objectives, like, it just doesn't work anymore.
I'm curious about
So you can throw away that cell phone.
It's tempting. Your disapproval of the Afghanistan war, that clearly puts you in the minority.
Oh, yeah.
Because Afghanistan was retaliation for 9/11. Why do you disapprove of Afghanistan?
Well, all right. I went to school for political science, and I did a year-long project on Afghanistan in 2000. And it was about the... I actually did this, you know, year-long thing about the Taliban revolution. And what struck me is, one, Afghanistan has been in a state of constant war for the past 25 years. And the idea that more war is going to help people, I think, is kind of fallacious. Now, I work in documentary film, and I did work on this piece that traced the travels of a young Afghan girl to get medical treatment, which wouldn't have been available under the Taliban. So there are definitely, like, there are, you know, positives to the war, but I think largely the problem is this. Karzai doesn't really control anything outside Kabul. It's incredibly difficult for any foreign power to take Afghanistan. The last foreign ruler who took it was, I believe, Darius of the Persians.
Okay.
And nobody else can really hold it. It's landlocked. It's a big plateau.
But I'm not too sure if you've answered my question.
Why was it a bad idea?
Why was it a bad idea to go into Afghanistan?
Oh, well, did we catch bin Laden?
No, we haven't.
Did we stop Al-Qaeda from recruiting or striking at...
So, what, you know, 9/11 happened. What... Would you have recommended that we do nothing about it?
No, I think we should have done what Cheney said the liberals wanted to do, which is make it a police matter. I mean, that's actually how, if you look at the White House list of terror plots, there are 10 of them, and 7 of them were broken up by foreign police forces, and 3 of them were sort of like a combined effort between U.S. and foreign police forces. How do you catch terrorists? You send in the cops. You send in Interpol. No one has ever caught a terrorist with an assault rifle. Like, it just, like, you can kill them and then they, you know, they get replaced. With a police action, you can actually hold them accountable for their crimes. I think that, you know, like, why didn't we invade Michigan when the Alfred P. Murrah building was blown up? I mean, why didn't we send in the troops to Ruby, you know, I guess we did send in the troops to Ruby Ridge, and, you know, look how that turned out. But, like, we had a tremendous domestic terrorism problem. you know, with the militias, and somehow, you know, we didn't carpet bomb Idaho. I don't understand why, because, you know, if the idea is that we can fight terrorism by sending in troops, I mean, don't you think that that would have been prudent?
That might be the dumbest thing I've ever heard. There was, you remember 9/11, were you in New York at the time?
Actually, no, I was an illegal immigrant in Canada.
Okay, so you were a refugee. From America, you were in Canada, 9/11 happened, automatically everyone in the country, whether they're Democrats, Republicans, or whatever
they were, want to kill somebody. Hopefully some brown people, right?
The Bush administration had no choice. They had to go after the people who attacked us.
It wasn't constitutionally mandated.
So what?
Well, they definitely had a choice. I mean, they made a choice.
And everyone in the country, except for a few crazy people like you, no offense, were in support of it.
Right.
So I don't understand.
Oh, because it was a dumb idea. I mean, I don't care what anybody else thinks. It was a terrible idea. I mean, look at how many people died in the invasion, and look at what we've accomplished there, which is very little. I think that, you know, like I said, I had studied Afghanistan for a long time. The idea that a foreign country is going to come in and fix Afghanistan, every single foreign power has tried it, from the British to the Russians to the Americans to the Indians. I mean, it doesn't work.
All right. We obviously disagree, but...
It's true.
I'll give you credit for at least saying something so incredibly weird, but I appreciate that. We'll have...
I'm just, you know, I'm against war in general, but I think that this particular war was a terrible idea.
The Afghanistan war.
Sure. Right. It's the same operation as the Iraq war.
We'll continue this in a moment. Alex Atrolio steps in with a blogcast. I am sure she will make mention of something relevant in the news. Maybe Elliot Spitzer? I don't proofread her stuff before she goes on. This is Blog Bunker. The number is 866-99-INDY on Indy Talk Sirius 110.
When you tell your tale. When talking heads and pundits matter not. When bloggers matter the most. You need the Blog Bunker. Blog Bunker. Only on Indy Talk Sirius 110. Indie Talk is Sirius 110. Every day, we are talking to you in a new way, and we'll let you speak for yourself. Novel, right? So take advantage of the chance. Weekday mornings at 9 a.m. East, it's the last of the political mavericks, Ron Silver. Then at 2 p.m. East, it's Pete Dominic and Pete's Big Mouth.
Well, Jesse Jackson did kiss me in the forehead. Yeah, his mustache tickled.
At 5 p.m. East, we dig into the voices and opinions from behind the most intriguing blogs of the day. The Blog Bunker. Indie Talk is on Sirius 110. True. On Indie Talk, blogs matter. We're feeling these right now. The Blogcast.
You're listening to The Blog Bunker, and this is your Blogcast. A look at who's saying what and where they're saying it. DailyCost.com comments on what is left for the Clinton camp. There are so many advantages for Obama that it will be tough for Clinton to convince superdelegates to side with her. There are two things the Clinton campaign has planned to do to pull ahead. Turn Obama into, quote, the black candidate, and discredit his campaign process. Read more at DailyCost.com. And Politico.com reports that the support for the war is at the highest it's been since 2006. A poll conducted in February showed that 53% of Americans think we will succeed in achieving our goals in Iraq. 48% of Americans also believe that the war is going, quote, very well or fairly well. Politico thinks that this will change how people talk about the issue in the campaign. Get the entire story at Politico.com. And ThinkProcess.org comments on a statement made by televangelist Reverend Rod Parsley. Parsley has endorsed McCain, and McCain has called the Reverend his spiritual guide. But in Parsley's book, Silent No More, he states that part of the reason America was founded was to destroy the religion of Islam. He also calls Allah a, quote, demon spirit, and says that Christopher Columbus wanted to stop Islam. See the rest of Parsley's quote at thinkprocess.org. So taking a look at the blogs that matter now, we have DailyCost.com for what Clinton's plan for the rest of the campaign is, Politico.com for the increase in support of the war, and ThinkProgress.org for what Reverend Parsley thinks of Islamic religion. That's your Blogcast for now. Another one coming up in about 20 minutes here on The Blog Bunker. I'm Alex Detrolio, and you're listening to Indie Talk on Sirius 110.
Our agenda is you. Isn't that enough? Your thoughts, your blog, your voice, Blogcast, Indie Talk, Sirius 110. Today, tonight, redefining conversation on your radio and in your head. The Blog Bunker, an exclusive part of Indie Talk, Sirius 110.
Not too sure how exclusive this show is to the entire channel. I'm not even too sure how important we are. But this hour is important to us, maybe to you. If not,
it's definitely important to me.
You don't interrupt me when I'm talking. How many times do I have to?
We'll try one more time.
We're talking to DJ Waletzki. My name is Joe Salzon. The number is 866-99-INDY, 866-994-6343. That's the numerical equivalent. Immigration is probably, DJ, one of, if not the touchiest issue in America. A lot of very strong opinions. I myself am largely indifferent on the issue. However, I imagine that your view of immigration is what? Are you pro or anti-immigration?
I mean, I guess I'm pro-immigration. I mean, my mother is an immigrant. Most of my family are immigrants. I think that's probably true of most Americans if you go far enough back. My position on immigration is that it's a civil rights issue, and that the idea that limiting immigration helps anyone, I strongly debate. My feeling about immigration is that, first of all, the way globalization works is that it hollows out the work in the middle. It hollows out middle managers. You get a lot of people at the top and a lot of people sort of at the bottom. And so there's an amazing book called Globalization and Its Discontents by Saskia Sassen that outlines a lot of what I'm about to say. But basically, there's a massive urbanization that's going on all around the world. And we're not going to be able to stop people from wanting to move, especially when things are bad in their country or things are good in their country. People are just going to want to move, and there's a tremendous demand for that labor. And, unless everybody gets incredibly wealthy and will want to pay, $10 for strawberries at the market, we're going to continue to have, if not want or need, we're going to continue to have illegal immigration.
Right.
Or legal immigration.
John McCain, the Republican candidate for
president, in a pickle.
He is, because he has angered many conservatives on his stance, which is basically granting legal status to immigrants who are here illegally.
Right. Or illegal. Just like Reagan,
Right.
Taking over the mantle of Reagan.
And Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama's stance is interchangeable, I guess. What does let's say you're running for president.
Sure.
All right. How do you convince both sides that immigration is necessary, maybe on an economic level, maybe on a political level? Why is it necessary?
Okay. We are not creating enough children. Americans are not having enough kids to really sustain population growth. And in fact, the only way that we're going to continue to be able to fund the Social Security mandate is to have massive, massive legal immigration.
So you're suggesting that people should have sex more?
No. I think people should have sex less. No, I think we should just bring other people from other countries in and have sex with them or not. I don't know. I think that America should get more international, cosmopolitan. Pick your adjective.
I think that is a terrifying idea and yet strangely arousing.
Well, that's why I brought it in. If sex sells, otherwise it's just, sticking up for Mexicans, which a lot of people don't like.
That's why we spent 2.5 days on Elliot Spitzer. I mean, that's...
Right.
That's,
are you going to ask me about that? I don't know what I'm going to say. Thank goodness.
I'm not. All right, so immigrate, it's so awkward when you watch a debate, a political debate, a presidential debate.
Oh, God.
And the topic of immigration comes up because you never hear anything new. You never hear anything radical.
Well, it's practically illegal to say anything new. You want to hear something new? I wrote something on my blog a little while ago. I have a perfect plan to stop illegal immigration. It's called the Start Snitching Act, and it's simple. We should just grant amnesty to any illegal immigrant who informs on their employers. That's it.
There was a similar piece of legislation that occurred in, I think it was here in New York. It was out in Long Island, actually, in Suffolk County, where I live, and it didn't pass. I somehow don't think that would ever work.
No.
Not in today's political climate.
Of course not. That's why it's such a good idea.
It's so interesting because almost anyone you ask, whether they follow politics for a living or not, if they're just casual observers or they're completely indifferent, everyone has an opinion about immigration, and it doesn't seem like there's any room to be wishy-washy. Either you are...
There's tremendous room to be wishy-washy. I mean, it's called, enforcement. You know, there's a difference between having laws on the books and enforcing them in a certain way.
Well, there was a case last year, I think this was in Arizona, there was a border security guard who was arrested because he shot and, I think, killed...
An unarmed...
Someone who was entering the country illegally. That seems like, when we have a situation like that, we are charting into heading into uncharted waters and... creating a messy situation at best.
I don't know. I think they're at this point, it's pretty charted. The guy went to jail, and the Republicans got the issue of isn't he a hero because he, killed some people that we don't like. I think everybody won except that guy who has to spend, however much time in prison for shooting an unarmed man, which I think he deserves.
Who was breaking the law entering the country illegally.
Who cares? You know what? Breaking the law, entering the country illegally is actually a civil crime. It's not a criminal statute.
It's still a crime. It's still illegal.
All right. Well, would you shoot someone who is involved in a libel lawsuit?
I personally wouldn't. I wouldn't shoot anyone unless they were annoying me, which you're.
Well, there you go. I won't cross the border anytime soon.
Well, that's good. Well, you're here legally, right?
I'm here legally. I was born in the United States. I'm a citizen.
That's good. So was I. But I think it's a dangerous precedent when you prosecute and imprison someone for doing their job.
That's not his job. His job is to put him in plastic cuffs.
What if the guy was unruly? What if he wasn't
more plastic? The guy's unruly. I don't know. You jump him, but you don't shoot him if he's unarmed. I don't really understand how that's justified.
You don't shoot someone who's unarmed. What if someone is threatening you? What if they come
with
at
what?
You and you
with what?
You have 1 second to decide whether or not to run away or defend yourself.
Right.
Maybe the guard didn't know the guy was unarmed.
I don't remember exactly what the circumstances were. I think if it was legitimately self-defense, I didn't watch it on court TV. I didn't watch the trial, but my assumption is that if there is a self-defense component to the argument, his lawyers talked about it. Jury said, I don't think so.
All right, DJ Waletsky of CasualSides.com, a much easier website.
I know.
To say. Thanks a lot for coming in.
Oh, thank you.
We hope it wasn't too frightening for you.
I'm not easily scared.
Clearly. Coming up, we'll talk to comedian and blogger, writer extraordinaire. He does everything. Elon James White. That's next. You're listening to Blog Bunker. It's Indie Talk on Sirius 110.